I was standing in my office. Like, come on down here, guys.
They wouldn't do it. Good morning. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. It is the year 2012. It's 9:30 a.m., and the city council will come to order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
It's a little drizzly out there today.
Yes.
Shocking. Winter, finally. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with a special proclamation. Is Aaron Faree here? Please come forward. I'm very pleased to read the following proclamation on behalf of the city. Whereas congenital heart defects are the most frequent, please have a seat, are the most frequently occurring birth defects and the leading cause of birth defect-related deaths worldwide. And whereas over 1 million families across America are facing the challenges and hardships of raising children with congenital heart defects, and whereas every 40,000 babies born in the United States with congenital heart defects, and whereas some congenital heart defects are not diagnosed until months or years after birth, and whereas undiagnosed congenital heart defects cause many cases of sudden cardiac death and in young athletes. And whereas, despite these statistics, newborn and young athletes are routinely screened for, are not routinely screened for congenital heart defects. And whereas a disproportionately small amount of funding is available for congenital heart defect research and support. And whereas congenital heart Defect Awareness Week provides an opportunity for affected families to celebrate life, remember loved ones, honor dedicated health professionals, and raise public awareness about congenital heart defects. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, with a tough crowd, but an impatient crowd, just another day at City Council. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim February 7th through the 14th, 2012, to be Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Week in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this week. Thank you. Erin?
Thank you. On behalf of the Portland CHD support group, many of us here, I would like to thank you, Mayor Adams, and the City of Portland for declaring the 7th through the 14th Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Week. We know that February is Heart Month in general. We know and have seen or have worn red ourselves on the 3rd in honor and support of those who suffer from heart disease. But what many don't know is that congenital heart defects are just as prominent, and they're just as, unfortunately, deadly. And they're not on ads, and they're not on billboards, and we don't see them on the news as often. So this week really allows us to bring into the spotlight congenital heart defects a little bit more than what you would normally see.
And where can folks go that are watching to get more information on congenital heart defects?
There are plenty of, there are a number of websites. Children's Heart Foundation is a wonderful source. They dedicate all their funding to research, and they have lots of information. There are support groups that you can go to. For here in Portland, Oregon, we have on Facebook the Portland CHD support group. And then there's other organizations. It's My Heart. And also through the Children's Heart Foundation, you can find other support groups.
So on the for the Portland, the best Portland contact is the on Facebook. The say it again.
Portland CHD support group.
Great. Well, thank you to you and everyone else who's been an advocate, who's this issue has touched you in some way. We're really glad to help raise the awareness on it. And congratulations on the proclamation.
Thank you.
Now, Now, those of you that are here for the proclamation, you're welcome to leave. We're used to that. you might have other things to do in your day. I just ask that, because we've got a full list, that feel free to get up. And we have an excellent lobby, marble floor, if you want to have more discussions out there. So we really appreciate you being here. All right, we have four communications. Can you please read the title for 118?
Request of David G. Gwyther to address council regarding Incorporation Day, the 162nd birthday of the City of Portland.
Please come forward. Have a
seat. Good morning. All of you should have copies of the original incorporation papers for the City of Portland, although it's a matter of conjecture what date Portland officially became a city. This is one of the dates that I found in my research, and I was thought the city might be interested in using Incorporation Day as a way of educating our citizens about the history of Portland. Recently, there's a book that came out that discusses it in detail. What I found interesting in reading the incorporation papers was the issues that you folks are being confronted with are some of the same issues that they could dealt with in 1851, primarily the paving of roads.
Yes.
as it turns out, there's 62 miles-ish of unpaved roads still in Portland.
Yeah.
The solutions they had in the old days was taxing the lot holders, the owners of the lots adjacent to the roads. And the other solution, which is Section 21, is having sort of drafting every able-bodied man over the age of 20 to work 2 days for the city for free, basically, on the roads. Now, obviously, that wouldn't work.
Thank you for signing up for that, sir. Yeah. That's very, very nice of you.
Exactly. Anyway, so I thought I should bring this to your attention. Obviously, there's a lot of issues in front of the city council these days, and this is something that I thought be timely. And I'm in the process of filing and running for city council myself, so I will be back again on the March 7th to talk about parking issues.
Great. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. You know, the way that you describe of the tax on mm-hmm. local property owners, that's mm-hmm. still how we do it.
That's right.
I'd like, I think it's good, though, that we have improved a little bit on when the city was incorporated. We no longer have stumps in the middle of those streets. So
correct.
I consider that progress. What do you think?
Very much so. And the city that was incorporated was actually just what could be called now West Portland. And then, of course, that changed. And also, it was in Washington County. Multnomah County didn't exist at that point in time. So some very unusual things that most people don't realize. So,
well, thank you very much. And really appreciate this very much. Thanks. Can you please read the title for communications item number 119?
Request of Alondo Simpson to address council regarding small business in Portland.
Alondo Simpson, hi. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
First off, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name, again, Orlando Simpson. I'm the Vice President of City of Roses Disposal and Recycling. I am here before you today to thank you for all your efforts to support small business, and I would like to encourage you to continue this work. I want to first off personally share with you my business success story. In 1996, while working for the City of Portland's Maintenance Bureau as a truck driver, a fanatical idea popped into the head of my father, Alonzo Simpson. After years of witnessing how the waste industry operated, through all the knowledge obtained, he decided to take the risk, jump into the waste industry, and this is when City of Roses Disposal and Recycling was founded. Alonzo was motivated with the goal in mind to build something for his children to have in the future. While still working for the Maintenance Bureau, he figured since garbage is one of the few industries that operates 6 to 7 days a week, that it would be a perfect opportunity to grow his new business by using his free weekend hours and weekday nights to haul waste, However, he always knew it would take hard work and dedication to see any light at the end of the tunnel. Who would have known that 11 years later, his company, which started with just one truck and one waste container, would still be around, and myself, his eldest son, would be coming aboard the family business in order to assist with business growth and development. Since joining the company in that 11th year, the light at the end of the tunnel has become more visible, and we have gradually, persistently, and patiently grown into something my father could have never envisioned. In early 2011, thanks to the Portland Development Commission, my father's definitive goal of growing his company to the point where he would be capable of retiring from the City of Portland's Maintenance Bureau became a reality. With the assistance of PDC and the State of Oregon, City of Roses Disposal Recycling was awarded financing to open a new division named Core Recycling, which will be the City of Portland's first lead nucleus material recovery facility. This facility will focus primarily on recycling a minimum of 80% of incoming construction waste. Since construction and demolition waste account for approximately 40% of the overall waste stream, and the Portland metro area having an overall recycling rate of 58%, City of Roses is a small business that is taking the necessary steps to not only assist the city in its efforts to increase recycling rates and become a leader in sustainability, but become a model of how innovative small businesses can work with government agencies for a common goal in which both parties benefit and prosper. Given the unfortunate statistic that 95% of all startup businesses fail within the first 5 years, these are exciting times for myself and my family. And no one really knows how long it would have taken for City of Roses to gain the access to capital in order to open a new division, which would enable my father to retire. But I tell you what, in these tough economic times, the City of Portland had plans for its local economy. The City of Portland also had a plan to invest in small business. The city followed through with its plan. My company became an element of that plan, and now my father can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel. And again, I'd like to thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for all your hard work in supporting small business, and I ask that you continue your support for small business through funds and programs. Therefore, like I had mentioned earlier, both parties can benefit and prosper. Thank you.
Congratulations. Really appreciate you being here. It's always good for us to hear the perspective of folks who have the core responsibility of doing of job creation. So thank you for that. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for item number 120?
Request of Fletcher Nash to address council regarding CCC and Clean and Safe.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your time.
And just, sir, for the record, if you wouldn't mind, sorry, I usually do this at the beginning. Just give us your name.
Oh, my name is Fletcher Nash.
Thanks, sir.
All right. I'm here today for no other reason than to thank you for saving my life. The Portland Police, Multnomah County, the HRR program, Central City Concerns, along with Volunteers of America Day Treatment. Just under a year ago, the Steel Bridge is where I called home. I remember day after day waking up, and the first thing I saw was traffic. I wanted to change, but I did not know how. And that's where the Portland Police came into the picture. Officer Stacy Dunn got me into the HRR program. I went to the Golden West building. I did my intake. And to my surprise, they gave me a key to my own room. I can't express the joy it felt to have a place of my own, and that's where the change began. The need for drugs began to subside. I could begin to see a future. I got into the VOA day treatment, and while I was there, I attended the graduation that you hold here. I wanted that. I wanted to be a part of the next graduation. And nothing was going to stand in my way. As it was, I was a part of the next graduation. I stand here before you today as a testament that the hard work you're doing along with HRR, Central City Concerns, is not in vain. And at the present time, I work for Clean and Safe. I am also a graduate of the Community Volunteer Corps. And I also today have hopes and dreams of a future. So thank you for giving me the tools to regain my life. And also, I would like to give credit to Austin Corliss and Robert Donaldson, you know, who played a real big inspiration, you know, because they cared about me at a point in my life when I didn't care about myself.
So that is a remarkable and inspiring accomplishment. So congratulations and thanks for sharing with us very much.
Thank you.
Mayor, if I could just add my thanks to Fletcher. At that graduation, I challenged the folks there to come and tell their stories, and so I really appreciate you following through on that, and Austin Raglione for your work with the service coordination team. Mr. Nash, you're a great example of why the citizens of Portland, the taxpayers of Portland, invested in this program, and now you're becoming a taxpayer again yourself. So thank you so much.
Hear, hear. Thank you all very much. You can stay. We won't be offended if you have to go either, though. Can you please read the title for item number 121?
Request of Shedrick J. Wilkins to address council regarding solo power and boycott Portland State University.
Shedrick J. Wilkins. Shedrick J. Wilkins. All right, let's move on. We'll consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for this presentation?
American Society of Landscape Architects Design Award for the Portland Mall Revitalization Project and recognition of Greg Baldwin.
I'm very pleased today to present this. It'll be a succinct presentation, but it is something worth celebrating, in part because the people involved with it, because of a key designer that we lost, and also because it was very controversial in terms of its design. Some of you might recall there was concern of mayhem on the transit mall because of the nature, unique sort of nature of how the rail and the buses would work together. And so we also get to talk about how the smart design, although innovative, has worked great. So with that, I would like to recognize, sir.
Can you put the images up, please? I'm Ron Stewart with ZGF Architects. Mr. Mayor, members of the commission, thank you for giving us some time this morning. In 1984, Portland won national design recognition with the Banfield Transitway. It received an Urban Design and Planning Award from Progressive Architecture. Such distinction continues 37 years later with two national awards for the Portland Mall Revitalization Project. First, the 2012 American Institute of Architects Honor Award for Regional and Urban Design, which will be formally presented this May at the National Convention in D.C. But today, we are here to present the 2011 American Society of Landscape Architects Award of Excellence in General Design, the highest award given by the ASLA and one that is given only in years when they deem a project worthy. In recognition of the Portland Mall revitalization, the ASLA jury commented, "It is through projects like this that Portland continues to stay at the forefront of vital, sustainable planning. It set a new benchmark for urban connectivity to reinvigorate a multimodal transportation infrastructure by a design team that was empowered by an unusually high level of political commitment." These words from the jury who reviewed the presentation. Civic architecture is most successful when it is the child of clear vision, close collaboration, and thoughtful execution. There is a pride of ownership and a sense of place that is palpable in this city, and it is a function of the mutual respect that exists between the private and public sectors, a respect that drives each to achieve a goal higher than either could achieve alone. Great work demands a quality interdisciplinary team of owner, designer, and contractor. Looking back to the 70s, colleagues like Roger Shields and Greg Baldwin, LTK and Metro joined with TriMet in an undertaking that was to put Portland onto the national stage as a leader in transit design of the highest quality. In 2012, many of those same players are still here doing outstanding work, and they were part of the Portland Mall Revitalization Project. Portland still has the political will to do great projects. TriMet, thanks to people at the top like Neil McFarlane and Rob Bernard and Ann Beckland, has redefined its reputation as an innovator. The Portland Mall is one of the first in the country to combine bike, auto, bus, rail, transit on the same urban street. Metro and LTK are still contributing. Doug Oblitz of Shields Oblitz Johnson, the firm started by Roger Shields, managed by word and by deed. Tad Savinar led a very successful block-by-block analysis of the entire 58-block alignment. And URS, DKS, and Mayor Reed were invaluable contributors. Special recognition needs to be given to Stacy Widbeck-Hewitt, who transformed ideas on paper into very real great streets, and my mentor, Greg Baldwin, whose vision and passion for this city was unparalleled. To each and many others is owed a great deal of credit. We are here today because Portland is proof that award-winning projects reflect the ethic of the city leadership in which they reside.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners, Rob Bernard from TriMet. I'd like to thank Ron and ZGF not only for his remarks, but for their vital leadership in advancing Portland's livability and economic health. As you know, TriMet appears before this chamber many times to discuss projects during the planning stages. It's wonderful to come here before the mayor and this council to talk about the fruits of those planning efforts. The Portland Mall Light Rail Project is a success because of those very discussions with this council, with city departments, with project partners like PDC, the downtown businesses, and the residences. TriMet believes that such partnerships and community involvement are why transit projects in this region are a model for the rest of the nation. That's not to say that this process or every discussion is easy, but it's the listening, the give and take, the incorporation of partners and stakeholders' ideas into the project that result in what you see here today and on the screen. Mayor Adams, as mayor and city commissioner, was a champion for the planning, the designing, and the building of the best project possible. Mayor Adams ensured that we had a successful budget and a design, provided the leadership for the tough decisions, like the decision to move all the buses off of the mall for 2 years, made sure that businesses and visitors retained access to parking, which is vital to their success, and raised the bar for the team to make sure we included innovative stormwater and additional bike parking along the alignment. At TriMet, we hope that you know how much we value and appreciate the city's support, advice, and collaboration. We feel it's a true partnership. Mayor Adams and this council are great examples of how vision, active dialogue, persistence can move communities and the city forward together. I'd like to turn this over to another key project leader, Scott Andrews, who was chair of the Portland Mall Management Inc. during both the planning phases and design phases, construction phases, and is the current chair of PDC Commission.
Thank you. Thanks for the kind words.
Thank you, Rob. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Scott Andrews, and I'm not here today with my PDC hat on. As Rob said, I had the honor of serving as chair of Portland Mall Management during the planning and construction of the downtown mall renovation project from 2004 to 2010. As you know, the business community worked closely with TriMet and the city to develop an expedited construction plan that would minimize impacts on the retail businesses that are the heart and soul of our downtown. PMMI was at the core of the tremendous public-private partnership that made the revitalization of the Portland Mall possible. This project had great support of the downtown property owners and businesses, and I'm sure you remember they voted to increase taxes through a local improvement district to help fund many of the improvements we see today. In fact, there was so much support, you might remember at the end of the design process, the architects came to TriMet and the city and PDC, or PDC and the business community, and said, we're really $9 million short of having the project that everybody wants, and we went back and we increased the taxes again. And it was one of my proudest moments because no one spoke in opposition. The city, TriMet, and the private sector also helped create a long-term maintenance program for the mall under PMMI stewardship. In addition, with PDC's support, the project was able to revitalize storefronts through an innovative block-by-block program led by Tad Savinar. Today, everyone's investment is paying off. The Portland Mall is an example of great urban design, great transit ridership, and vital private investment on 5th and 6th Avenues. The Nines, Hotel Madeira, Marriott Courtyard, Davis Street Tavern, and many, many more. We can all share in Portland, in the Portland Mall's renaissance, but we must not forget one of the visionaries that made this possible, Greg Baldwin. I first got to know Greg in the early 1990s as I worked behind the scenes as a board member of the Multnomah Athletic Club. Greg was a key member of a very small team that was teeing up an expansion of the MAC, an expansion now known as the Laprinzi Wing. This complex project was the kind that Greg loved. The talk about expansion was very controversial and included design, transportation, zone, building code, and political hurdles. Greg was brilliant, and when the project was ready to announce to the membership, we had a game plan in hand that included the answers to all the key questions that a member might have. The project was completed in the late 90s, and I can't imagine the MAC without it today. The mall project was my second opportunity to work with Greg. Greg was really amazing, always up on the latest design, selling concepts, and able to steer the project through the budget, construction, and political issues in the way. I honestly think that the mall's become so successful that many people already forget how bad it had become. Greg really pushed everyone to make it special, and he was a key to its success. Greg was also very, very good to me. In our last project, the Downtown Retail Strategy Committee, which I had the honor to co-chair with the mayor, he was really wonderful in helping the committee maintain a very positive attitude and focus on the key activities that would enhance downtown's vibrancy. Now, we all know that Greg did not suffer fools kindly, so his comments were very meaningful, and he helped me get through some very difficult discussions. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to tell Greg how much he meant to me or to our city. So, Greg, wherever you are, thanks for everything, and we miss you already. And finally, I want to thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for your part in keeping this vital part of downtown clean, safe, and worthy of national awards. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, we would be remiss if we didn't also mention the contributions the Portland Bureau of Transportation played in this entire role. Sue Keel and her staff, and Teresa Boyle, and any number of people who I will now offend by not including hundreds of people, but were really critical in having this project be as successful as it is. It really was a collaboration, and for that we thank you and the council and all of our colleagues at the city.
Well, thank you all very much. Rob was stolen from us to be the project manager for the mall project for TriMet, the lead manager. And he had come off an equally a difficult project. He was the project manager that the bureau manager and I assigned to fix the tram project. And so congratulations. And you've gone on to do a few other projects, I've heard.
Yes, sir.
Like?
We're working on the Portland Mall, Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project.
So it just gets better. So thank you all very much. And Teresa and your team, thank you as well. Great work.
Mayor, if I might comment.
Yeah.
Thank you for your work. I was on the Planning Commission when the Designed Mayhem Plan was brought to us, and I must admit that I did not think it was going to work. So I'm very pleased that it has. And I believe we should also recognize the drivers, the TriMet drivers of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 757, who make it work and who are very diligent. I'm amazed every time I ride the bus downtown how well everybody knows what the weaving in and out is going to do, and they do it. And need to encourage all of the car drivers and bicyclists to also recognize that this is a very intricate system and stay in the lanes that you're supposed to be in. So thank you so much for your work, and thank you for bringing this presentation, Mayor.
I'd just like to thank all of you and the mayor also for making the mall revitalization a success. I will, so since my window faces Fifth Avenue, I still see any number of cars still driving in the wrong lane, but that'll take care of itself in time. But it really is a success, and I had my doubts myself when I first heard of trying to get all this into one street or two streets. But it seems to have been a true success, as recognized by the American Society of Landscape Architects and AIA. Those are very great honors, and I just wanted to also offer my own personal tribute to Greg Baldwin. He was a great person, added much to the fabric of this city, and he is truly missed. Although I see Ron, is it Ron?
Yes.
Ron, I see you've carried on the bow tie tradition of your mentor. And I did want to just take an opportunity to say while you're here that I had the opportunity to recently tour the soon-to-be-open Randall Children's Hospital on the Emmanuel campus, which was designed by Zimmer Gunzel Frasca, and really a great job. Particularly, I was impressed with the sustainability features, rainwater gardens, and everything, and so I just want to thank you for that. And what most impressed me as I was leaving my tour was the swales, the bioswales in the middle of the street, and I know that was probably part of your design work too, but it was great to see that, so good job.
Thank you.
Mayor, if I could also add, thank you for the presentation, and I had the honor of attending Greg Baldwin's memorial service at the Art Museum, and there were learned about it, all the projects that he had put his heart and soul into, and while this is a conspicuous part of his portfolio, I think there's two other things he loved I just want to acknowledge as well. He had a hand in something called Director Park, which was also an award-winning park, which I think we all would agree has transformed that part of Portland. Once upon a time, it was kind of an eyesore and a garage, and now it's one of the really great urban plazas of this city or any city. And there's all kinds of economic vitality that's beginning to spring up around it. So, and he and a number of his colleagues used to spend a lot of time in there sort of with their punch list and fine-tuning the design even after it was built. And so we appreciated that. And then there was the other thing that he loved deeply, which was racing his car. And he was a champion for the PIR, which is, you know, in the parks portfolio but serves the whole city. And I have a colleague in my office, Jim Blackwood, who actually races his car there when the public's allowed to take their cars out for a spin. And I've done it once with him. I don't recommend it unless you have a lot of Dramamine. But the Greg showed up at all the meets, and he was a champion, and he had a vision for a master plan for what that it could be. And I can't think of any greater tribute to his legacy there than continuing the work that he led with the friends of PIR towards creating a world-class venue. But it was an honor to work with him, and he made this city a better place. And Mayor, I look forward to the day when we will be able to name something of great importance in our community after him. So thank you for your presentation.
I also see in the audience John Russell and Patty Tillett, and I want to acknowledge you and thank you for all your fantastic work on this, both the original mall and the redo. Want to honor you as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome again to stay and see more democracy happen, or you can leave. We're not offended.
Sammy has a plaque for you.
Oh.
It's the actual
presentation. Oh.
The actual presentation.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm impressed that K2 is here to film this presentation. this may even lead the 5 o'clock news.
Here's your camera. David, where's David?
Thank you. This is great. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, give a round of applause.
All right. Can you please read the title for
1-3-2. Authorize Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Police Bureau to ask Oregon Liquor Control Commission to initiate rulemaking on liquor licenses for food carts.
And for those of you continuing the civic tradition of talking with each other, we would really welcome you to enjoy the marble floors in the foyer. I think they're marble.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. This resolution is a request for Council to support city staff in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Portland Police Bureau in petitioning the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to make rules pertaining to the sale of alcohol in food carts. OLCC is prepared to issue permanent annual licenses to cart owners who apply. We already have significant resources devoted to public safety issues surrounding the use of alcohol from standard brick-and-mortar types of establishment. Adding food carts without rules could create significant problems for our emergency responders. We know that there are responsible vendors who mean to do the right thing with these types of permits, but the OLCC does not have any enforceable regulations that pertain to the unique characteristics that food carts present when alcohol is sold there. We believe that those regulations need to be in place prior to the issuance of permits, and that those regulations will hopefully require specific safeguards. The public might think, why don't we simply create these requirements? It's important to note that the city has no control over regulations pertaining to licensing of alcohol. Only the state can make laws in that regard, and we are forced to respond and react. This is our way of being proactive in that regard, working with OLCC to ask for rules to be put in place before petitions for licenses are approved. A substitute ordinance was distributed in the Tuesday memo. The mayor and I met with OLCC staff and the chair of the commission on Monday. And as a result of that discussion, we added a further resolved directing the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Liquor Licensing Division in conjunction with Government Relations and the Police Bureau to work with legislators and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission in the upcoming legislative sessions as well. So, and also there was a typo in that substitute in the listing on page one, the third whereas said that in January 2011, there are 696 active food carts within the Portland city limits. That's actually of January 2012. It was a Scrivener's error. So I move the substitute.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Council.
I guess I have.
Council. I'll get there, I promise. Council discussion on the motion.
So the substitute contains language that I don't support at this point, and that is that we should statutorily prohibit food carts from serving alcohol. I think, you know, there's been, to my knowledge, no process with the food cart industry on this. And while I definitely support rulemaking about controlling food carts dispensing beer, wine, or liquor, just like any other establishment licensed by the OLCC, I'm not ready to jump to statutorily prohibiting that because I don't think, A, there's been any process about that, and B, the case to me has not been made that we should prohibit it outright. So I can't support this substitute.
Thank you for that clarification, Commissioner Saltzman. The language says to statutorily prohibit or restrict. We don't have any control over what rules the OLCC might adopt if they agree to adopt rules. So depending on what those rules are, we might need to petition the legislature to prohibit if we don't feel that those rules adequately protect neighborhood safety, neighborhood livability, and our police's ability to enforce those rules along with OLCC.
So it's what public process has occurred with the food vendor?
Well, there will be a public process. It will be part of our legislative agenda setting. This resolution merely raises the puts it on the table for discussion. It's not saying that we agree that we're going to prohibit licenses. It states that that might be one of the options, but it's not in any way intended to say that that's our goal.
Well, again, I guess with all due respect, I read that as saying, you know, if we don't like what the OLCC does, which we often don't, and we sometimes go to the legislature and have succeeded in the past, I'm not ready to say that's the avenue we're going to pursue until we give the OLCC and the Police Bureau and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement a chance to come up with some meaningful rules that may not necessarily prohibit it.
Would you be more comfortable if we delete prohibit or and just put statutorily restrict?
I would just be more comfortable if you just struck the words and to statutorily prohibit.
Right. That's what I just proposed.
So,
well,
Well,
okay.
I want to keep all options on the table. You can make a motion.
Yeah, I mean,
the motion is to substitute. You can vote against the motion.
Mayor Adams, if I may, my understanding is we're putting this will allow us to have a resolution before the council. We'll then be taking some testimony, and yep. then there'll be an opportunity to amend. But I think our normal
there's a motion on the floor.
So I would move the motion.
All right. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
I will vote for the purposes of discussion. Aye.
Adams?
And I'm voting for this because I want the full range of options before this council. Aye. So we are now considering the substitute. Commissioner Fritz?
Teresa Marchetti from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's Liquor Licensing Coordinator is going to present the issues.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor Adams and Commissioners, there are, I'm Teresa Marchetti, I'm the City of Portland's Liquor Licensing Program Specialist. There are an estimated 696 food carts in the Portland city limits. If even a fraction of these seek a liquor license, we could be facing a pretty incredible increase in public safety and livability impacts for the Portland community. We consistently partner with the OLCC to address public safety concerns that affect the entire community of Portland. Several examples of these are the alcohol impact area for downtown, seeking legislation to allow immediate closures in the event of a homicide at alcohol serving establishments, and also one-on-one problem solving that occurs daily that covers a wide range of issues. It's really in the best interest of all if we have an opportunity and if we can address these issues proactively, if possible. Food carts are fundamentally different from traditional brick-and-mortar establishments, and the same assumptions about control of alcohol service, about monitoring of alcohol consumption and accountability are just not true. And these enterprises really need some clear guidelines to clarify that. Enforcement of these issues would fall largely to the police department in a time when resources are already extremely strapped, as we know. This resolution would authorize ONI and DVD simply to seek rulemaking on this subject that would allow us to partner effectively with the OLCC to mitigate these concerns by clarifying enforceable requirements when licensing food cart entities. And we've also been attempting to address the need for immediate temporary closures related to establishments where serious crimes have occurred. We failed to get this passed in the last legislative session, but we will be efforting that again in 2013. And this resolution just simply reiterates that need and charges police and ONI and government relations with the task. Thank you.
So we currently have, we currently seek statutory prohibitions or restrictions on liquor licenses at establishments when inherent safety and livability concerns exist. I can tell you as police commissioner on behalf of the police bureau, we do that right now.
Absolutely.
Would you suggest that for food carts, we limit ourselves or we eliminate the possibility of trying to close down a business that we think is inherently unsafe or providing intolerable livability concerns? Do you want that prohibition as a matter of city council policy taken away from us?
No, I think that it's paramount to leave that as an option that's available on the table.
Commissioner Fish. Commissioner Fritz and team, thank you for bringing this forward. I think that the core of this is that my understanding is you're trying to ensure that the city of Portland has a voice in this process and that the regulatory process not go forward without a full public participation.
That's part of it, Commissioner Frisch. The other challenge is that currently OLCC is proposing guidelines for such establishments. We want there to be actual rules.
Yeah. So I look forward to learning more about this, but there were a number of questions that my staff and I had when we were looking through this, and I just want to maybe share them with you, and then we can come back to these. One is, what has been the experience with food carts in other cities? Clearly, we're not the only city to have a lot of food carts. Are there other cities that allow food carts to sell alcohol, and how do they regulate them, and what's been their experience? Second, there's a I'm familiar with the difference between having a drink in a restaurant where you're not allowed to leave the restaurant with your drink and going to a package store where you are allowed to leave the package store with the alcohol you've purchased. What's not clear to me is whether a food cart is a package store or a restaurant because of the absence of any kind of defined boundary around it. So I'm not even sure what category of regulation it would fall under. Three, there are a host of regulations which attach to serving alcohol. I'm curious as to how it would impact the staffing and oversight within food carts. Often food carts have as few as one person working. Sometimes they have a younger person or older person. I'm assuming it would impose a whole set of regulations which would have to be adopted. Four, when you said there were 696 food carts in the city, it reminded me that when in my neighborhood, which is Hollywood Grant Park, when there's a change in a retail use and some establishment wants to serve liquor, then a sign goes up in front saying there's a permit application pending and there's a whole public process. How do you deal with 600 and potentially 696 applications, and what is the process for notifying people, and how is it maybe the same or different than from what a restaurant does? I could go on and on, but I think there's a lot of important and interesting questions which we have to put on the table before we start weighing in pro or con. But it does strike me that it quite fundamentally changes the way we deal with alcohol and food. And I'd like to start by knowing how other cities have dealt with this and what their experience is, and use that as a guide. But I appreciate this being brought forward because I think the city has a strong interest in making sure that whatever rules are adopted do not negatively impact the neighborhoods and areas around where food carts are located. And if this is new ground in terms of regulating, let's make sure we get it right. And I have some real concerns because food cart does not feel like a brick and mortar restaurant, and I'm not sure how you monitor and enforce the law in a food cart context as opposed to a restaurant. So I'd be interested in knowing more about all of those.
Commissioner,
not necessarily now, but as you go through this process.
Well, why don't you at least deal with the other cities now? What other cities do?
Well, we're going to let her respond.
Okay.
Thank you. I think the concerns that you've just reiterated are exactly the concerns that we have. We don't know necessarily. We don't know whether or not package store licenses or restaurant licenses would be granted, or both, depending on the models. In Exhibit 2, there is four separate models that the OLCC is considering in terms of licensing. But in terms of the workload for applications, we don't know. Because again, the guidelines that are set up are merely suggestions from the OLCC right now. There's nothing clear, there's nothing definitive about what the rules would be to license food carts. And that's essentially what we're here to ask you to allow us to do, is to go to the OLCC and ask them, let's define some rules. Let's answer those questions about how other cities do it before we just move forward with liquor licensing carte blanche.
Thank you. Other council discussion? How many people are signed up to testify?
Did you have any comments?
No, I don't. And I'm Officer John.
No, we're going to call you. You just have to wait for public testimony.
If five people signed up.
Okay.
Mayor, I just wanted to have Officer make a comment.
Oh, I thought you did. You want to comment?
Oh, I think Teresa covered it.
So I want to make it.
Although I would be interested to know from a police perspective, you know, in the experience of establishments that serve alcohol and the amount of disturbance that may or may not be associated with establishments that serve alcohol, and how that might be different without walls. And I'm thinking specifically of the most responsible establishments you go to. If one is not drinking and you go to a place that serves alcohol and you're not drinking, you notice that the people who are drinking have elevated voices, and they seem to get louder the more they drink. So how do you expect that to play out when you don't even have walls?
Well, I think the a lot of the questions that are coming up are the concerns that law enforcement has. We simply don't know what this is or what's going to happen. The concern, I think, particularly in Central Precinct, is you're going to see an increase in street drinking. that you're going to have a lot of overspill from these food cart areas, and there's really no language in terms of how we're going to monitor this, what OLCC is going to do to make sure that they are in compliance with whatever regulations are in place. And essentially, that's going to fall to the police bureau. And I think the concern is that this kind of amounts to what they're doing right now with these guidelines that they've established or they put forward. It essentially amounts to them experimenting, and we're left to pick up the pieces. I think that that is the concern that the police bureau has. We simply don't know what the impact is going to be.
Well, I can speak. Having spent time with the chief, I can, and his team, I can speak. And just adding my own thoughts, I have grave concerns about this proposal. We are spread thin as it is. And to spread thin further geographically, because this has the potential to open up new liquor selling establishments in parts of town there where there might not be right now a vendor of liquor. So we're spread further, thinner, in different parts of the city. Even if a fraction of the 696 apply, it's a real problem for us, as we're also looking at budget cuts, as we're also dealing with gang violence, as we're also dealing with a whole host of challenges on the public safety front. We're going to have be spread. We're going that the, if this moves forward, it inherently will make our job harder in the police bureau. I want to be really, really clear. I didn't know who applied in terms of the food carts. You know, this isn't about any particular application. This is about coming up with fair and sound policy for the city and being very honest with folks of what the likely trade-offs will be for making this choice. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission has amazing power over this issue, and city government does not. And that is frustrating, but at least I have the bully pulpit. And during the time that I've been police commissioner, when an establishment acted how we felt irresponsibly, we sought to shut them down. And we sought and did shut them down when there have been serious safety concerns. And so today, the conversation about eliminating our ability on a case-by-case basis to shut down establishments that have allowed themselves to become so unsafe is even beyond what I could imagine subjecting the city to in terms of undermining our basic public safety and making a difficult job of public safety almost impossible. Taking that tool off the table, that intention off the table, is, I think, although well-intentioned, is in the end incredibly irresponsible.
And Mayor, if I may just add to that, I agree that the public safety concern is the paramount one. I'm the commissioner in charge of neighborhood involvement, and so we sometimes have establishments which don't rise to the level of a severe safety problem or a homicide, but which cause problems in the neighborhood. Teresa, could you describe the process where if an establishment is being loud and having nuisance behaviors, what's the process and the likelihood of getting that business's license revoked?
It's extremely difficult to meet the threshold for a license cancellation or revocation. It requires a long, serious, and persistent history of problems, of violation history. We do know that a violation or a report is written in only a fraction of the actual incidents. It requires documentation from police. It requires response from police, from neighborhoods that have to document over a long period of time issues that are occurring that are impacting them then. Once we have that, we go to the OLCC. We make a case. At that point, having made the case, it can take up to from a year to 3 years for any official action to be taken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess the other question becomes how one defines a food cart, and I see that there's a part of the resolution would give us the authority to define what that meant for serving alcohol purposes, but I'm wondering if more generically the Bureau of Development Service, and this is something I just started kind of delving into when Commissioner Saltzman took the Bureau over, but if there's some capacity, lacking cooperation from the OLCC for us to regulate food carts in a way that essentially eliminates the issue, which the food cart owners wouldn't necessarily like, and maybe some Portlanders wouldn't like. But if we have some authority to regulate food carts in the manner of where they're placed in the zoning, and I, like I said, I just started scratching the surface of this issue, and I think we have some authority we have yet to exercise in terms of regulating food carts.
Mr. Leonard, may I engage on that point for a second? Because it goes to another issue, because I remember when you were the commissioner in charge, you had the issue of some illegal structures
right.
that have been, and you that you sought to have permitted. And that raises an interesting question. In a typical restaurant, bricks and mortar, the landlord and the lessee have worked out the liability issues. The legislature has the authority to decide who's ultimately responsible, but this is a question we deal with a lot. Who ultimately, when a bar sells, is irresponsible and sells too much alcohol to someone, and they have a reasonable it's reasonable foreseeable that person's going to get in their car, who's liable? I think one of the issues we'll also want to look at, since a lot of the food carts are lessees of parking in parking places, is ultimately what would be the responsibility of the owner of that space in terms of a food cart selling alcohol, and would they be jointly and severally liable for any of the consequences of illegal activity?
I think that's one appropriate avenue. I think another is to look at zoning and to look at you know, we don't allow by code anything developed by anybody to plopped anywhere in any neighborhood. And really, when you get to the elements of food carts, this could be an issue of zoning. And we've been pretty relaxed in terms of enforcing those codes. So what I'm suggesting is that I think this is a good start in terms of strategy. I think there are other tools that we could use as well that, as I said, may not make some of the food cart owners happy, may not make people who frequent food cart owners happy. But my concern is, as I've said here many times, is I have a very strong principle I live by. A person's home is their castle, and they should be able to live in their home unmolested, either visually or audibly, from what others do. And particularly when you live in a dense city like Portland, I have little tolerance for people who want to exercise some right to the detriment of a whole bunch of other people's rights. And so I would be looking to find creative ways to make sure we protected people's rights, which I think would help the police bureau as well.
So shall we get to the folks that have signed up to testify? When you come up to testify, you'll have 3 minutes. Give us your first and last name. And if you are registered to lobby on behalf of a business, for example, that you own or somebody else's owns, or you're lobbying on behalf of an association, even a nonprofit, you need to declare that as well. Call the first four.
Are Roger Goldengay, Carol L. Otis, Veronica Renard, and Lisa Frisch.
Hi, welcome to City Hall. Glad you're here.
Thank you very much.
You got two more? Okay. Would you like to begin, sir?
Certainly. My name is Roger Goldengay. I'm the owner of Cartlandia. We are the applicant with the OLCC. We share many of the same concerns that have been expressed here by the City Council. We have been going through a very long process with the OLCC. I'm surprised to hear that you don't think there are any rules that we have to abide by, because we certainly have been presented with a lot of rules by the OLCC. And we've also been inspected by Office of Neighborhood Involvement and received a letter of favorable recommendation from the Drugs and Vice Division. This process has been going on for over 8 months. We were given a control plan by the OLCC, which we have to abide by. Several of these rules would be class one violations, which would withdraw our license immediately if we violated them. I'm happy to share these with the City Council. I think that what we have seen and the process we have been going through with the OLCC seems to be considerably different than what your experience and what your knowledge and understanding of the process is. It's been fairly intense. The number of rules that we've had to agree to have been quite substantial. The ideas that you're presenting here in terms of what is a food cart, we're basically no different than any other business.